Hi, and welcome to Edulate, the podcast by educators for educators, where we talk about people, pedagogy, practice, and of course, passion. Our first guest for season two is Russell Cairns, also known as Rusty Robot. Rusty is a K-6 teacher, an EduTech leader, an ICT and DT advocate, with digital ed and STEAM being his go-to pedagogy. Welcome aboard, Rusty.
Hi guys, how are you going?
Thanks for joining us, Rusty. Look, the first thing we really want to know about is obviously a bit about yourself. How did you get into the educational sector and what's your journey been?
So I suppose probably best place to get started is to tell a little bit about me. So I came late to teaching. I started teaching when I was 50. I had a background in advertising and marketing and special events. And I did all sorts of really crazy and exciting things. But when I was climbing mountains in Nepal, I came across kids that had a real solid need for education. And I found that I was able to communicate quite easily with people from other languages just by sort of carrying my iPad with me. I also went to Bali and I looked at we did some work in some schools in Bali, and I looked at Green School in particular, and that seemed to, you know, really motivate my interest. Moving forward to after my graduation, as well as teaching in schools and doing, contracts in Catholics and independent schools, I was doing work for Parks and Wildlife, taking kids onto Milson Island and some other places. And I was on a boat heading across to Milson Island, and I got a phone call from the Department of Education as a targeted graduate. So they weren't quite sure aware of where the school was, but of course you were to take a permanent position. So 5 years later, at the same school in Borkham Hills, I'm teaching 900 kids a week in a makerspace that I built myself. And teaching them digital technologies, ICT and robotics. So that's a little bit about me coming from an unusual background into teaching. I think there's lots of us that come to teaching later on in life because we see teaching as kind of like a bit of a service. And it's certainly difficult navigating the roadblocks.
It's a pretty rich background you've got going on there, Rusty, to be quite frank with you. It's actually quite beautiful. Rusty, I'm wondering now if you could talk a bit about your practice as an educator.
We speak a lot about integration and integrating different things into the curriculum because of lack of time and pressures and things like that. And the main focus on being on things like literacy and numeracy and explicit teaching. It's really hard to sort of do implementation. So implementation is how we're going to take hands-on learning, experiential learning, and implement it into a classroom. I think we're constantly shifting track. And I think that I'm a lifelong learner and that I'm always trying to reinvent myself. I think coming into education at a much later age offers some sort of cultural difficulties, and you get a lot of pushback, and people say that you've got to learn the craft first before you go off and specialise. And there are limited opportunities to specialise. So I don't have an official role of a specialist. I just have to keep evolving. And I think we're going through that pivoting process where we're moving away from perhaps some of the robotics and the coding that we were doing 2 or 3 years ago, and we're moving more towards the digital literacy and the creation tools, which includes, digital citizenship and safety online, and understanding how to app smash, so how to host Microsoft Teams meetings within Google Classroom or vice versa, learning about the different tools.
I'm wondering if you'd mind elaborating a bit on that and talking to us a bit about the pedagogy that kind of informs that.
My pedagogy is hands-on learning and inquiry-based learning and project-based learning, problem-based learning, but basically just getting kids to do stuff. So if you're seeing lots of kids for a short amount of time, it just requires lots of organization and pre-thinking and learning by failing. These are the 8 big ideas that Seymour Papert embraced. And he embraced that, this learning by doing, but building things with technology. So if you go to watch his old videos from the 80s, here he is recommending that computers should be, and learning with technology and robotics should be in the classroom alongside music and things. He talks about hard fun, learning to learn. And I mean, that's the educator as well. So I'm a big fan of co-teaching. He talks about taking time. And that's that, in that design thinking or engineering model to make things cyclical, where the student and the teacher goes through a process where things go back and you review it.
That cyclical process for me is really powerful, because it's that, you know, that talk, that interaction, that feedback, that pushback, that, you know, that's where the metacognition really happens. I think it's powerful.
And it's seeing those sort of penny drop or light bulb moments go off in kids. A lot of that is only facilitated by mixing kids up and putting them in different groups with different skills. And the other thing is failing and failing well. The seventh point is teachers as learners. So teachers learning, you know, being a facilitator and learning alongside. And the last one is learning together. So that's some of the pedagogy that sort of drives me and influences me.
It's a really nice framework to kind of, you know, hang your hat on a bit, because I think, you know, in all of that, that transfers across all teaching and learning areas. However, as you said, you know, that's at the heart of inquiry, project-based learning, which I know, you know, as you've said, it's a bit of a passion for yours and something you have an amazing knack at presenting. Rusty, I wonder if you could talk to us, now that you've kind of unwrapped these beautiful ideas of eight, you know, these eight big ideas and your pedagogical preferences, I'm wondering if you might talk to us about how do you enact that? How do you actually take those ideas and then pop it into place in your context?
Well, one of the vehicles that we use is design thinking. And the two slides that I'm going to sort of share with you today was the Seymour Papert's constructivism, or constructionism, they call it. So the business of constructing things. And the second thing is design thinking. And we were really lucky when New South Wales decided to reinterpret the digital technologies curriculum. And one part that they sort of decided to focus on, there's many parts that they didn't focus on, and there's many parts that we're still hoping that they can improve on, was the design thinking. You having an explicit model, and, you know, there's obviously argument about the words and you know, the unpacking of things and how things are done, but having a model that you can refer to, just like scientific thinking or even like the modes of learning. So the Department of Education has got this really cool modes of learning, and they say, you know, this is instruction, you know, this is discussion, and this is demonstration. Even we brought those elements in, and we painted tiles, and we put the tiles down on the floor and said, we're doing this in this part of the room. What does it look like, and what does it feel like, and what does it sound like?
That's pretty powerful. And I think that then becomes that notion of a living life, live classroom, where, you know, the kids are actually, they understand the thinking process that they're in at that point in time, which I like myself. So they probably really relate well to that.
But if I could steal another a slide from Maker's Empire, it's saying, you know, how design thinking, you know, builds in kids, and that it transforms difficult challenges into design opportunities. It creates confidence in the kids' creative abilities. It's a believing that we can. So it's that, you know, building up the efficacy, the grit, the challenge, using an intentional process. So, you know, going back and when we introduce this, often we introduce kind of like a dummy project. So if we're working with 3D printers, we might get all the kids to make a bag tag, or, you know, like a bookmark or something like that. Now, that's not our intention to make this piece of plastic, but that's to explain to the kids, this is how the process works, this is the end product, and then from then we can build into the prototyping and the drawing and the design and things like that.
And that's that explicit part of the inquiry cycle that we talk about, Rusty. And this is the part of the inquiry cycle that I'm sure you'll agree that a lot of people believe, you know, doesn't actually fit within the inquiry cycle, but we know that it really does.
Well, I just think that if you're using, universal design for learning and you're sort of backwards mapping your end assignment, you have to say, I've only got so many weeks. What's this going to look like? And this, if you can dedicate the first 3 weeks to the actual process of making something before you hand it over to the kids, then they understand, because we've all been through the same thing together. Now, the main criticism of inquiry-based learning is that kids branch off and sort of lose focus, and that they need more instruction. And then the criticism of too much explicit teaching is you end up with a display or a PowerPoint or showcase where kids are doing pretty obvious sorts of things, and everything looks pretty much the same and bland. The last four things is that to make it human-centered, collaborative, experimental, and have optimism behind it.
So how has this transferred into a thing of passion for you?
What we were really lucky to do was about 3 years ago, I partnered with another great teacher that was doing similar sort of work. And we started running STEM showcases for teachers, doing workshops, educations, making that professional learning where the learning was hands-on. And we were successful in running a number of teach meets, and then moving on to a whole range of student experiences that we organised as well. So that was the fun part, and that's what we jointly got the ICT Leader of the Year last year for. Yeah.
And well-deserved, might I say, because it's those kinds of things, as you said, you know, education is a profession of service, but it's not just a profession of service to our teachers, it's a profession of service to our community and to our colleagues as well. So if we can push each other up and make each other better through sharing, well, hey, well done.
Yes, and there has been a big pivot. We've pivoted away from, you know, perhaps some of the making activities because of, you know, the COVID situation and the learning from home. And we've pivoted away from some of our coding activities, and we've pivoted more to, you know, the creation and the digital literacy and areas like that. The advantage is most of us, if we're using, we're teaching STEM, we're using a device. So if we can use the device as the vehicle and get kids really familiar with multiple devices, multiple platforms, multiple ways of doing things, group work, and getting everyone, if we can, to work on projects collaboratively and online. So how this all happened is I was judging some New South Wales science awards, the Young Scientists Awards, and we saw this kind of digital divide, and this was 5 years ago, and I'm about to do another one in a weekend's time or so, and we saw this digital divide, and we saw how there was a lot. We went into schools and we spoke to the teachers and we visited the spaces, and we just found so much great stuff just locked up behind doors. So I think that the thing is go with what you've got and see what it is that you can adapt to your particular need, and take a risk and embrace kind of like the hero teacher status, where one teacher decides to do 3D printing and then can teach it to two or three other classes throughout the year.
Good advice. I think taking a risk is definitely the first step, and definitely using what you got. You don't need to invest, because if you hunt around your school, you'll certainly have something that you can use.
That comes down to implementation again. And the thing that we found is schools have got tons and tons of, you know, like Lego EV3 kits or something like that, which is now retired, that may be all missing pieces. And we really strongly think that schools should have like an integrated model. Feel really strongly about, you know, like Jane Hunter's book, and she talks about 10 different things that we can do to integrate STEAM and STEM, and how we can sort of break down those barriers and get high performing schools. It really starts from preschool and moves on up, and it's more got to do with the cross sharing between schools and hubs and things like that. And that sort of led into some work that we did with, you know, looking at makerspaces and makerspaces around the world. I did an e-exchange with some Canadian schools, and it was just like so amazing that the same experiences that we're having or the same problems that we're having, they're having similar problems. So any opportunities that we can to speak to other states, other professional learning organisations, speak between the Science Teachers Association, the ICT Teachers Associations and things like that, and find those common areas, because we too much we go into battle, and the battleground is literacy and numeracy. And when the kids are doing this, they're doing this, the literacy and the numeracy all throughout. It's just getting them to do it efficiently, and building up those skills.
And with a purpose.
Yeah. I think the moving forward, after, you know, lockdown number two, we really need to get schools to invest in e-learning integrators. And I think there's going to be a bit of a pushback in the next 6 or 8 weeks towards using technology. But it's really important when we come back in the new year, from day one, you've got your Google Classroom or your Seesaw, your Microsoft Teams. From day one, you've got those set up. And the last thing I should say is make sure those areas around your school, those different learning spaces, are used every period. You know, they should be used at lunchtime, before school, after school, and maybe not recess. But there should be an opportunity to have everything well organized and fully charged and accessible.
And I think that's key as well, because I know you spoke about, when we had a chat prior to the podcast, you spoke about this great idea around the Tech Embassy, which is this notion of students leading the way by planting little seeds, and they become, you know, the advocates for what needs to happen and what needs to change in the classroom. Did you want to talk a minute to that?
Yeah, so certainly that model's worked before in my school, and some other schools in New South Wales have done a really good example of that by embracing our kids in particularly in year six. But if you can get them in year five and year six, to teach them how to teach other teachers and other students on how to troubleshoot simple problems, and skills of working and sort of the integration of simple things within the technology around the school. So they might become Chromebook whizzes or iPad whizzes or smart board whizzes, getting the smart board to do different things. They may be involved in a lunchtime club, which involves video production, and having those tech embassy of kids that can go around, and often the teachers call on them to come in and help them get things working. And then those kids those students are a forefront at Education Week, at the assemblies, at the sports carnivals, recording that information using the, you know, the podcasting or the vlogging thing, and building websites and doing that sort of thing.
Beautiful concept. I love it. Rusty, it is always a pleasure to hear you speak. I've heard you speak quite a few times now. Your passion just echoes through every word. Your dedication to education is admirable, and thank you. We're blessed to have you in our teaching and learning community. If anyone wants to reach out to you, Rusty, how can they connect? What's the best way to make a connection?
The best way is to just reach out to me on Twitter at RussellCairns1. And the second thing is on Clubhouse at RustyRobot65.
Thank you for joining us on Edulate.
Thanks so much. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed episode 1 of season 2 of Edulate. I'm Bec Keogh, and thanks for joining us.